The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals is now deliberating the federal lawsuit alleging unlawful handling of emergency hearings in Pennington County. Three appellate judges heard oral arguments in St. Paul yesterday. Two tribes, along with Native parents, filed suit almost 5 years ago against the Seventh Circuit Court, the Pennington County State's Attorney, and the State Department of Social Services. They say officials in these agencies violate the Indian Child Welfare Act, as well as due process protections. This is a case of first impression. No other courts have determined if there's a constitutional due process right at emergency hearings held quickly after a child has been removed from the home. Federal Judge Jeffrey Viken determined that Pennington County policies are unconstitutional, and when officials refused to make changes on their own, he devised a plan going forward and ordered compliance. That was in December 2016. The officials filed an immediate appeal with the Eighth Circuit. Victoria Wicks has been reporting on this case for South Dakota Public Broadcasting since it was filed in federal court in March of 2013. She brings you this report on the latest developments.
Rapid City Attorney Jeff Hurd is first up in a lineup that includes four lawyers, three for the government officials and one for the tribes and parents. Each side has 20 minutes to make its case. Hurd represents Seventh Circuit Presiding Judge Craig Fifley. He starts by laying out the basics.
When an official takes custody on an emergency basis of a child in South Dakota, that child must either be returned within 48 hours or a petition for temporary custody has to be filed and a hearing held within 48 hours after that removal. This case tests those procedures.
The tribes and parents say those procedures are insufficient, that due process should come into play at that first hearing. That means that parents of children removed from their homes need to be told why the child was removed, to have an opportunity to confront and cross-examine witnesses, and to consult an attorney. Those are some of the changes Federal Judge Jeffrey Viken ordered.
We're asking the court to reverse the motion to dismiss, to reverse the summary judgment, to vacate the declaratory judgment and the injunction.
Hurd tells judges there are two avenues of relief if the state violates someone's constitutional rights. A plaintiff can sue the government employee who commits the violation, and liability does not attach to the employer. Or the plaintiff can sue the governing body, the employer, but only if the constitutional violation is part of an official policy put in place by a policymaker. Hurd says neither of those scenarios apply to Judge Fifley. He notes that Judge Jeff Davis was listed as a defendant when he was presiding judge for the Seventh Circuit. After Craig Fifley took over those duties, Davis was removed as a defendant, and Fifley was added to the list. Hurd says that switch happened under a federal rule of civil procedure that applies only when the person sitting in the office is the office. Then, if that person leaves, the court can substitute the next person who comes in. But Hurd says the presiding judge does not mandate courtroom practices of the other judges in the circuit.
So if the presiding judge of the Seventh Judicial Circuit is not the final policymaker of the offending policies, then Judge Fifley must be dismissed and the district court's denial of the motion to dismiss should be reversed.
Hurd tells appellate judges he also finds a problem in the plaintiff's due process arguments.
Nowhere in the country has anyone ever held that the levels of protections provided for in the district court's declaratory judgment were required within 48 hours of an emergency removal.
He says those constitutional protections are all required before parental rights can be terminated, but they're not practical at a hearing that happens fast. The two other appellants also make a case that they shouldn't be subjects of the lawsuit because they don't have the last word on how those hearings occur. Attorney Rebecca Mann represents Pennington County State's Attorney Mark Fargo. She says employers can be held liable if they give decision-making power to subordinates, but that situation does not fit Fargo's relationship to the courts.
The policymaker can change how his employees are acting at any time by promulgating an official policy or prohibiting the widespread practice. But a state's attorney has no control over how a judge handles his hearings. He cannot promulgate an official policy that's going to change the judge's practices. He cannot prohibit the widespread practice of another agency.
The attorney for DSS takes a different approach, invoking sovereign immunity for the two women he represents, DSS Secretary Lynn Valenti and Regional Child Protection Services Manager Lisa Fleming. Bob Morris points out that the 11th Amendment bars suit against states in federal court and, by extension, state employees acting in an official capacity. Morris says there's an exception the plaintiffs rely on, seeking prospective injunctive relief, or in other words, putting a stop to future actions of state officials that are wrong or illegal.
What the court ultimately ruled was Judge Davis created six policies that were caused unconstitutional deprivation or violated federal statutory law.
Morris says Judge Viken put the blame on then-presiding Judge Davis for the way emergency hearings were held and then held DSS and the state's attorney liable because they went along with them.
The court identified no custom policy or any official action that they were responsible for that caused any deprivation. But what they said is because you did not challenge the judge in terms of the procedures in his court, you did not attempt to change anything in his court, you acquiesced. Therefore, you're as liable as he is. That was the court's decision.
ICWA is the single most important law Congress has ever enacted to protect Indian children, Indian families, and Indian tribes.
Stephen Pivar with ACLU argues for the tribes and parents. He says before filing the lawsuit, plaintiffs examined 4 years' worth of abuse and neglect cases heard in Seventh Circuit Court.
During those 4 years, as the district court found, the defendants removed 823 Indian children from their homes. They then convened a hearing for the parents, these 48-hour hearings, to determine whether the court would grant the state's petition to keep those children in custody or return them to their parents. The state won 100% of those hearings.
Pivar says judges made those decisions based on ex parte evidence from DSS and Vargo that was not shared with parents. And he says even 17 months after the U.S. District Court granted summary judgment to the plaintiffs, the parents were still not given due process at emergency hearings.
What makes this issue so straightforward is that Mr. Vargo admits that he and he alone created both of the policies that we're challenging.
Pivar disputes State's Attorney Mark Vargo's claims that he is not a policymaker in these hearings.
He made a deliberate choice not to give parents in the 48-hour hearings a copy of the petition for temporary custody, the PTC, that he was submitting to the court accusing those parents of abuse and neglect.
The ACLU lawyer tells appellate judges that Vargo also admits withholding the ICWA PTC. But he says Vargo later changed course and agreed to give those documents to parents. Pivar says because Vargo had the authority not to give PTCs and then to change that decision, he is clearly a policymaker. Pivar says Pennington County has been observing Judge Viken's orders for almost 2 years now, and things are going well.
Mr. Vargo gives the parents a copy of the petition beforehand. DSS gives the ICWA affidavit beforehand.
But Pivar says Vargo testified at a hearing that he saw nothing wrong with not providing the documents, and without the federal order, he might return to his previous practices. In rebuttal, Jeffrey Hurd tells judges that defendants have been following the mandates of the federal court, but he's heard anecdotal evidence that doing so has not changed the outcome of the hearings.
Most of the people are not taking advantage of the hearings because it's too early in the process. They don't want to put their client under oath within 48 hours.
One of the judges asks how that information is relevant, and Hurd responds.
Because under Matthews, you only impose new burdens on a court when you find that there is a benefit to be gained from.
The three-judge panel will deliberate this case and issue an opinion later. The outcome could affect all emergency hearings conducted in the seven states of the Eighth Circuit. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City.